Hi, I'm Corey Raven. Welcome to Crosstalk Podcasts. I'm really excited. We have a great episode. And the incredible thing is here, I have this lady named Irene Lignos, who's going to interview Sean with us. Hi.
Hi.
What's going on?
How are you, Corey?
You ready for another LA session?
I am. This is really a marathon, but it's been worth it.
Oh, it's the best. And we have people throughout this LA trip in the music business. Mm-hmm. And this interview is no exception. I'm really excited that Sean G is with us.
Thank you.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, Glenn?
Thank you.
I'm doing really well.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are, where you're from, how did it all begin?
Yeah, sure. Originally from the Bay Area. You know, again, my name is Sean Grand. I'm an artist manager here in Los Angeles.
What's the company you manage called?
It's Adjacent.LA. That would be my boutique management company. We're based in downtown Los Angeles. Shout out DTLA. I manage a gold certified producer, Zaro Vega. He is a multi-genre producer, executive producer, super talented guy. I'm originally from the Bay Area, like I mentioned. Grew up in a split household. Parents never married. Dad's from Eastern Europe, came here as a refugee to the States. Mom's from LA. And so, you know, kind of spent time between both households growing up, a little bit of travel out of state, out of country. Speak Hungarian, ate a lot of Hungarian food growing up. Got good exposure to the world growing up, which is something I'm really grateful for. And grateful for all four of my parents. Wouldn't be the person that I am, you know, today if it weren't for,
so let me
for
just,
all four of them.
I just want to understand, you said you grew up in a split household, meaning
yes,
that mom lived one place with a spouse.
Yes.
Dad lived another place with a spouse, but in the same community.
In the same community, yeah. You know, we moved around a lot with my mom. My stepdad came into the picture, and my stepmom did as well when I was about five, and, you know, they were there. They've been there throughout the entire journey. So, yeah, just a lot of bouncing back and forth, you know.
Great. So you went to school in the Bay Area?
I did, yeah, public education. Did a little bit of private school you know, college.
Did there come a time when you dabbled into drugs and alcohol, and when was that?
It was young. I think I first started smoking weed around 13. I was already smoking a couple packs of cigarettes a day at 13 in Eastern Europe. That was where I started smoking cigarettes. Hawaii is where I first smoked weed, but it didn't kind of like evolve and get more serious until it was, you know, in California and whatnot.
Did you go away for the summer to Eastern Europe?
Eastern Europe, yeah, we'd go during the summer predominantly. I'd go to Hawaii during, like, you know, winter. Opposing summers or winters, you know, yeah, when we weren't going to Eastern Europe.
And did you drink when you, because, like, you know, I grew up going to Greece in the summer and we would stay for months. And, you know, at 12, 13, St. Mary, I was smoking cigarettes, so very,
you know how it is.
Familiar.
Yeah.
And I was drinking, you know, not a lot, but I was, you know, allowed to.
Right.
So I did. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where it all began. Do you have a similar experience that, you know, because you're in Europe, the drinking age is younger? And
yeah, absolutely, Irene. I mean, you know, it was fun. I was not allowed to. My dad's super strict. You know, real old school. My mom, you know, that household, much poorer, like I said, from LA, much more like a hippie type vibe. So very different, which is something that perhaps we can get into a little later. But when I was over there in Europe, it was always with my pops. So I was sneaking, you know, what I was doing. At first, I mean, I was a good kid, you know, always studious. School was easy for me. I didn't have to try super hard, but I was a big skateboarder. You know, I remember getting offered a cigarette when I was at a skate park when I was young in Cali. I said no. But when I was in Europe this one summer, then, you know, a good buddy of mine, he just kind of like pressured me into doing it. And sure shit, by the end of the summer, I was smoking two packs of Reds at 13, you know, finishing up the day, finding some type of, you know, perfume, you know, deodorant type of thing to spray on myself and get home before my dad would yell at me.
I'm laughing because I'm now a non-smoker and I have been for years, but I can smell a cigarette on somebody from a mile away. And I think to myself, all those years that I sprayed perfume thinking that like no one would know. And I could just imagine that like my mom was like, you're an idiot.
I mean, I think back on it now and I'm like, how did he not know? I mean, we were going out to bars, yeah. You know, I remember going I mean, he must have known, yeah. But like, I just knowing my dad, like, how did he not whoop my ass or like say something? I'm thoroughly confused.
How
by
could
this.
You afford two packs a day at that age?
I mean, it was
they
even
were like $2
cheap over
Europe.
There. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, get a little money from, you
it's
know,
still
from my
cheap.
Dad. Oh yeah. For
now
sure.
You need a mortgage to get cigarettes in the US.
In New York. Yeah.
Tell me about it. It's like paying double rent.
You don't know? Smoke still, do you?
I do.
Two packs of reds?
No. I do smoke, but nowhere in that capacity. Right. I have quit different times. I've quit for multiple years, but it's just sort of like that typical, you're out, you're having a good time, you know, drinking usually, and somebody offers you one or you ask for one, and or you start with just taking a drag, and pretty soon you're asking for one, then you're bumming another. And
so tell us a little bit more about, you know, you grew up kind of traveling, so you're a bit of a world traveler, going to both sides of the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sort of kind of starting to do some antisocial behavior. And how does it develop into, you know, doing drugs?
Well, I remember we used to buy weed from our dealer and he didn't have any. And it would be late at night, you know, we would be my buddies over at my house. You know, they were allowed to come over. You know, my mom always created a safe space for us. Bless her heart, you know, she only ever had the best intentions. But, you know, we had a lot of freedom. So we used it. We would take one of their cars. We didn't have licenses. You know, we'd go buy weed and, you know, we'd come back. But like I said, one night, my dealer didn't have weed. You know, he had ecstasy. So I'm sitting there with my buddy and we're kind of thinking about it. You know, we're pretty young. We're kind of scared, you know, and we want to get high so bad that we just did it, you know, and it ended up being really fun. It was one of those kind of things where everything I grew up with, you know, a lot of anxiety, you know, stress in the household, you know, I felt normal. And I was like, oh, this is what it feels like to be normal. That's what I thought.
When you say normal, meaning you were no longer stressed out, you were no longer anxious,
yeah.
You felt comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just felt enthusiastic and
you love everyone.
Yeah, I didn't have this sense of, you know, this pessimism. There's a lot of pessimism. You know, in one of my households. So, you know, it created a lot of anxiety for me, a lot of stress that I still deal with on, you know, today. Mm-hmm. So when I started, you know, doing that, I really felt like, wow, I feel like I'm enjoying talking to, you know, people more. I'm probably more fun to be around, you know, all these things. So I figured out a way to be able to take it every day to the point where when I was 16, I was working at you know, as a server. I was high on ecstasy every day at work. And then, you know, in the process, we started dabbling with, you know, other drugs as well. And, you know, it was just go to what we could get our hands on, you know? Yeah. Yeah. By the time I got into college, I was starting to experiment with Xanax. That became like my go-to. Again, I just noticed, you know, anxiety I was feeling wasn't there. I just felt so good, you know. So that was a lot. I felt easier on my brain than taking ecstasy all the time. Mm-hmm. So
I guess I'm jumping ahead a little, but it seems like a common thread that you keep mentioning is anxiety.
Yes.
And, you know, I suffer from anxiety as well. And I've learned now different ways to handle it. And it's like gone up and down in sobriety. You know, there have been more intense times than others. How do you handle your anxiety today?
I mean, it's a constant struggle. You know, I think my confidence has grown a lot. You know, like I said, this journey of coming to LA, a lot of it was to pursue my dreams as, you know, a business-minded person working with creatives, which kind of like evolved more into artist management. But a big part of it as well was just to kind of like start fresh and get away from, you know, everything that I grew up with at home and just kind of figure out who I was. Mm-hmm. And in that process, it's been rocky. You know, there've been a lot of ups, there've been a lot of downs. That freedom wasn't necessarily the best thing in certain ways too. But overall my confidence has risen a lot, you know, as I have figured out more of who I am, you know, what I stand for, what I like about myself, you know, what I represent and what my purpose is on the planet. And that's really helped me. You know, I don't care as much what other people think as I used to think. I used to care a lot about what other people thought, their validation, you know, all of that. It's not that I don't care about people, I do, but trying to live, you know, a super, you know, kind of happy life, I think focusing a lot on, you know, other people's view of you, or evaluating yourself based on what ifs and all of that versus how you feel. About yourself and just knowing yourself and what you bring to the table is you know, a whole different can of worms. So that's been something that's been big for me. I think that, you know, my childhood created that anxiety. It created that desire for validation that in some cases I didn't get, you know, in one of my households. I also work out. You know, I do have a therapist. I do go to AA. You know, these are things that help me with my anxiety relating to other people. You know, being here with you guys right now actually helps me a lot. Just to know, you know, I don't need to feel like the crazy person in the room, you know, talking about all of this.
Tell us more about, you know, you're growing up, you're breaking the rules, you know, you are traveling the world, like, how do things start to unfold in your 20s? Like, did you go to college?
I did. Yeah, I did. You know, was pretty avid. You know, I was a good student. My dad was just, you know, school all the time. So, and school was pretty easy for me, like I mentioned. So,
business major.
Yeah, entrepreneurship. My dad's an entrepreneur. He's a, you know, came here with nothing. He was a machinist, started a machining business and invested in real estate, you know, and did very well for himself. And I'm really proud of that story. I grew up, you know, really proud of that. It's the American dream. And I think anyone can do it. And that's why I'm very empathetic of people. I also am a no bullshit type of person. But that said, I really admired his story growing up. And, you know, with that, I wanted to kind of follow in his footsteps. So yeah, I studied business, studied entrepreneurship, got my MBA, also in entrepreneurship, straight after my undergrad, and then went into the work world. I did 3 internships before finishing my MBA, and then went out in the job market. Operations, early stage finance, and sales and marketing. So I kind of, you know, was trying different things out.
But you were using on and off during this whole period?
I was drinking a lot then. You know, I went to an undergrad where it was really great socially and I had an amazing time. And it's a good school and it was a good business program. Kids weren't that studious though. You know, it's a big party school.
Where'd
you go? Chico State.
Okay.
Chico State. You know, again, it was a good education and I was involved in some really great things there that shaped me into, you know, more of the leader that I am becoming. Going to Pacific was a big thing for me. It's a private school in Stockton. Kids really study there. I was like, oh, wow, this is very different. 18-month intensive program, you know, straight out of undergrad.
This was for your MBA?
This was for my MBA, you know, no work experience. Before that, you know, just straight out of high school. So I really felt like pushed to go through my education, and part of me really wanted to. And my stepdad's actually the one that encouraged me to get my MBA. And, you know, at the same time, I just felt like I was running. You know, I realized that there was a lot of time that I spent being studious that other kids were spending being social. And so they were better at socializing than me. Or maybe there were just certain experiences that I didn't have growing up because my father was so strict, that, you know, that they had, you know, kind of on average. So I just noticed kids were kind of more social than me.
Let me just ask you something.
Yeah.
You said something. You said I felt like I was always running.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I felt like I was always in school. I felt like I was always moving towards a successful career. Yeah, a goal. I mean, I didn't necessarily know what that was yet, you know, but that was all I cared about. That was all I thought was important. That's what I was told to do.
So how has I remember hearing about party mode phases.
Yeah, back to that.
So, you know, we're talking about all this good progress, scholastically, degrees, internships. Yeah. I want to hear a little bit about how your progress was perhaps impacted by the phases, the different phases that you went through from a drug and alcohol standpoint.
Yeah, it hasn't been all, you know, sunshine and whatever the
roses.
Sunshine and roses.
I
you know,
so,
thank yeah. you. Yeah, it really hasn't been. I mean, I am a highly functional user, you know, of any substance that I do use. You know, you're not going to be able to tell till it gets to a certain point. You know, and I'm going to use that substance as a performance enhancer. And so that's what I did. You know, I had heard that, you know, there's all these, like, I don't know who I heard this from, and I don't even know if it's true, but there's all these, like, you know, really smart people getting their PhDs who are using drugs, you know, to enhance their performance and stuff like that. And I'm noticing to myself that, you know, like I said, anxiety, stuff like that's kind of more at bay. And I don't know. I mean, I can just sit down and do work, you know, I can get through the day, you know, just fine. So
you're talking about now on drugs or
drugs,
better off
alcohol.
Drug.
Now I don't use
better.
Anything.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's this journey of like, okay, it's been 20 years of on and off drug and alcohol use, always kind of bouncing from one thing to the next, you know, having to deal with the ups and downs, you know, of that constantly, the hangovers, you know, the withdrawals, you know, the money, you know, all of that, to just, you know, really finally getting to a place in my life later than I would have hoped, to be honest, where I'm much more comfortable in my shoes, just being here, without anything except for, you know, a cup of coffee or water, you know? So it hasn't been all sunshine and roses.
Did you feel like it's easier now for you to do all the things you want to do without any of those enhancers?
At this point, definitely. You know, if you would have asked me when I was kind of like mid swing, I probably would have said no, because I hadn't reached the tipping point.
Yeah.
You know, but when you start to really like see it on yourself, and when, you know, it starts to impact your relationships with different people, I started to see it kind of like, you know, where maybe people could tell, you know, or maybe mentally I wasn't in my best place, you know, and maybe that came across, but people didn't know why, or, you know.
Did it ever get dark for you?
Yeah, it did. It got really dark.
What did that look like?
It looked like it looked like something that I could no longer control. It was the first time in my life where I felt like I might not be able to get myself out of this hole. I was using ketamine super heavily. And it actually is something that helped me a lot in the beginning. And I know it's studied, and I know there, you know, there can be benefits. I don't know if they're long term or not, but I was convinced that it was the thing for me forever. But like anything else, I couldn't moderate my dosage, you know.
Neither could Matthew Berry.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever benefit it had, it got to a certain point where it wasn't doing that anymore. And I was spending a lot of money on it. And I was watching, you know, all my savings from working, you know, not all of it, but a good amount of it going into that as I'm simultaneously pursuing being an entrepreneur.
What would you say, and maybe you're getting to this, but what would you say was like a pivotal culminating event that was one, maybe one of the times you attempted sobriety?
I mean, a lot of it came down to money, and having to, you know, it's like, was I going to let my addiction run the show, or kind of like, you know, was I going to do something about it and make sure that my journey to LA actually was going to have a chance of success? You know, so that's kind of what it took for me.
That's only something that high functioning addicts and alcoholics can do.
Okay.
I don't think anybody who's completely off the rails isn't thinking logically about that. And I identify with that. Some of the best things that I've done were actually when I relapsed from a business standpoint. Wow. I wasn't completely insane. I felt like shit physically.
Yeah.
I was not taking care of myself.
Right.
And, you know, the relationships I had were completely built on lies and you know, flim flam, some kind of thing of explaining why I fell asleep at dinner last night. It had nothing to do with Oxy.
No, of course
it was
not.
Just I just had a bad dream last night, and, you know, I was thinking about it and I went back to sleep. It was something, who the hell knows, whatever. All lies, all bullshit.
I mean, you didn't fall asleep in your Chinese food like I did on Christmas?
You know, I may have done that. I may have done that. But speaking of lies and bullshit,
yeah, just saying.
I know one of the things that, Sean, you want to talk about is how important trustworthiness,
yes,
ethical behavior, and transparency is to you today. You're in your first year, almost midway through your first year of sobriety.
Yeah.
And those are the ideals, the goals, the things that you want to show in your own life. Why is that so important to you?
I mean, you know, as representing people's careers in the music industry is something that they, you know, to represent you, you've got to trust somebody a lot, you know, and for other people to want to work with you, you've got to be a solid person. You know, there's a lot of people that dabble, that party, that have a good time. It's not uncommon. It's not like, I mean, I made it a long way, you know, keeping it a secret, you know. But I want to take my career and my client's career to the next level. And I know that I need to be my best self in order for the universe to, you know, to allow that. And that's part of what I've seen and how I view this journey. Even when I made mistakes, you know, I knew that the universe was guiding me in a different way, even if I didn't correct my behavior, because I saw opportunities coming up again to do it and again to do it. And if I didn't take them, then it became a harder and harder lesson. And like I said, I pushed it all the way to the end, to where maybe not the end, but it was at a pretty difficult stage
when I finally made a choice.
So what happened? I mean, like, you are high functioning.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're pretty successful.
Thanks.
I mean, before even.
Yeah. More successful than probably.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you measure success by money only, I guess.
That's a good point.
But, you know, as you said, money isn't everything. But what happened? Did you have an intervention? Did someone stop you? Did you go to treatment? It sounds like, you know, you have a similar family situation to me, and I don't know if your family is like mine, but there was a stigma to therapy. There was a stigma to, like, they were like, wait, rehab, you know, but they knew I needed it.
Yeah.
So did you have that experience?
I did. I did have that experience. You know, my dad, he has no idea, to my knowledge. Well, you know.
Hello, Dad.
Yeah, hopefully he never sees this. But if he does, then let it be told.
Hopefully you'll help more people than, you know.
That would be the goal. That would be the goal. Either way, at this point in my life, I think, you know, I'm just ready to be exactly who I am. And, you know, it can't come at the cost of my authenticity, you know, to keep secrets any longer, because that's what I was doing.
What did the demise look like?
It was a trip to see my mom and my stepdad, and I was drinking a lot. You know, wasn't using hard drugs in that moment. But again, it's always just been kind of one or the other. So I just wasn't myself. They didn't like the way I was behaving. I was very defensive about it. And my mom just said, you need to go to AA. So I had already quit ketamine at that point, you know, again. But I moved right into, or continued with, the drinking. So at that point, I'm like, oh God, I don't even have this to lean on now. Okay, this is really it, you know. She's telling me to do this. I don't think I've ever not listened to my mom, you know. So I said, all right. And I just,
that was about going. 6 months ago almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
It That's was pretty cool that Thanks. She kind of knew where to lead you.
Yeah, she's a huge blessing in my life. I would be a complete mess without my mom.
So you didn't go to formal treatment or anything like that. You went to AA.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
I have to say.
When did you start therapy?
Therapy has been a huge help. I started about a year and a half ago. And it's been amazing. LA Christian Health Centers.
Did the therapist ever suggest AA?
No, interestingly.
Were you telling the therapist what you were doing?
I was, yeah. But we never really talked about alcohol. It was ketamine use. And to their knowledge, which for a long portion of that time, I had quit because I was working with this intern, you know, therapist there, or someone interning working to become a therapist, you know, and I had quit. You know, I said I was going to quit. I've always been that type of person, you know. So I did. And I had her support, you know, and those around me. But eventually I relapsed.
So how has this journey so far been? Because, you know, you seem really just very self-aware, very far along, in my opinion. You know, it's almost like you got here before you got here.
Thanks. I don't know, you know, I really appreciate what you're saying. I don't, you know, necessarily always feel that way. You know, I don't know. It's great to hear other people's experiences, such as yourselves. I am taking it day by day. I don't plan to go back. I have been vocal about it. I think we talked about that earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Sharing it with people. I'm really committed to what I'm doing. I am, you know, I'm just not willing to let it keep me from, you know, my dreams at the end of the day. So
how's physical fitness impact your ability to stay at a good space?
Yeah, it's huge. It's super important. I worked out heavy for about a year. I kind of tapered off, and I can feel the difference. You know, I've started again, you know, it just hasn't been as consistent. It hasn't been 5 times a week. You know, I've been going like, you know, 2 to 3 times a week, you know, my workouts aren't as difficult as they were. But I'm going, and last week I went 5 times, even if I'm just getting on the treadmill and I'm running, you know, It's really important for my mental health.
What would you tell somebody who's contemplating a life free of alcohol or drugs? What would you say to them to help them make a decision to change?
You should be doing it because you're ready, not just because I'm sitting here telling you, you know, to do it. If it's impacting your life in a way that, you know, is keeping you from realizing, you know, your purpose on this earth, then I think that you should really look at that, you know, and consider whether that behavior is going to serve you going forward or not. And I think you've got to be ready to make that commitment at the same time.
And you were.
I was, you know. Well, that's why I paused, because it was my mom that said, you know, you need to go to AA. I wasn't planning on it, you know. So maybe sometimes you do need a push, you know.
You were. It seems like you were getting, I always say, sick and tired, right?
I was very sick and tired.
I'm going to guess that you have a question that you might want Sean to answer.
Yes, I do. I always have questions. I mean, I could talk all night.
I could tell you by the look in her eyes. I know I can mind read what she's thinking.
So if you could go back to an earlier stage of life and tell your younger self something, it could be 5 years old, it could be 25 years old. What age do you picture when I say that? The first thing that came to your mind, and what would you say?
I picture myself like 3 years old.
Wow, you can remember 3 years old?
I remember certain moments.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I remember certain moments that were very traumatic, you know, for me. And I would just tell myself it's going to be okay, you know, because that's what I needed to hear, you know. And I don't think either one of my parents could, I don't think they could have told me that enough, or, you know, hearing it from myself would have been nice.
Impactful.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.